Thursday, June 10th, 1999. To the outside world, that day came and went like any other. Nothing major happened. No scientific breakthroughs. No great discoveries. It wasn't until later that June 10th became a day to remember. A day when the Chinese Communist regime created a Gestapo-style police agency with the mission to destroy Falun Gong.
It's truly like they're ghosts and demons. Just a group of demons there.
An agency named after the 10th day of the 6th month, 610. This program attempts to answer the question, what has China done to Falun Gong practitioners?
The most diabolical kinds of tortures that the human mind can contrive.
The painful screams of the practitioners lasted all night.
And how have they done it?
You're dealing with a police state that lies.
There are 610 branch offices in almost every level of government. This organization is above the law. It controls, leads, and orders various regions and their various departments.
To find the truth, we have to go into a dark cave, a place Chinese authorities don't like to talk about, a place where people are in pain.
This is not just an aspect of how they rule, this is the core of how they rule. It's a terror state. China today is a terror state.
These documents are from the local 610 office in northeast China's Tangshan City. Published 5 years ago in the Epoch Times newspaper, they describe a new campaign to transform Falun Gong practitioners in China, codenamed Spring Thunder.
Actually, this is the core of the whole persecution.
Transformation is a kind of ideological reprogramming. And the 610 office transforms Falun Gong practitioners by forcing them, by any means necessary, to give up their beliefs, to sign so-called guarantees to stop practicing, and even to confess to fake crimes in order to prop up the propaganda campaign against Falun Gong.
The purpose of the torture is to extract false confessions from them, linking Falun Gong to violent activity, anti-China activity, criminal activity, in order to justify their persecution. You needed the propaganda in order to sell the persecution to the Chinese people. It's about selling the persecution both to the people in China and to the outside world.
Torture is what fuels the mechanisms of persecution. Through torture, Chinese authorities extract false confessions that are then used by the state media to justify the detention and arrest of innocent people. And through torture, Chinese authorities strip away the identity and will of whomever the Chinese Communist Party sees as its enemy.
The first thing that happened after they were detained was a physical. There was a body search and a physical examination.
Han Guangsheng is a former Chinese official from Shenyang City. He ran two labor camps and two prisons in Shenyang, including this one. And 4 years ago, he told NTD about the Falun Gong practitioners who were held there. At the time, he only spoke on condition of anonymity, but he has since revealed his identity.
Afterwards, they were forced to read anti-Falun Gong newspapers and watch anti-Falun Gong news reports and other programs that were against Falun Gong. This is how they were re-educated.
But refusing to transform, refusing to sign the paper, can lead to a lot of trouble.
At the time, according to what I know, the most severe persecution of Falun Gong occurred at Liaoning Province's Masanjia labor camp.
The Masanjia labor camp is infamous in China for torturing people to death, but it was considered very successful by 610 higher-ups because of its high transformation rate. And Han was ordered to send a representative to Masanjia to learn from their so-called transformation experiences.
After he came back, he told me he only learned one thing from Assange, electric cattle prods. And he said we should use them too. I said absolutely not.
But ironically, Han's labor camp did end up using cattle prods. One of the most public faces of the persecution, Gao Zhongzhong, died after being repeatedly tortured with electric cattle prods at Han's Longshan labor camp. But Han had long since quit his job and defected to Canada. He saw Gao's picture on the internet.
I saw this on the internet later on, and saw that her face had black burnt spots. I was really shocked.
Pictures of the Masanjia labor camp and other well-known labor camps and prisons in China all show impressive modern facilities and even beautiful decorations. But experts say it's merely a mask used to disguise what goes on inside.
China has, you know, managed to put the little wrapping on the bomb and is keeping it concealed and hidden. They torture people in places that have little Christmas wrapping, but it's just wrapping, because inside that wrapping, there is a bomb.
Today, the 610 office is basically an open secret, and it's expanded its persecution to underground Christians and other religious dissidents.
Many religious followers are treated the same as Falun Gong, but internationally, they have not created as big a stir, so it's hidden deeper.
Hao Fun Juan is a former state security officer of the Tianjin City 610 office.
My office was in charge of the relationships between the different branches and the movement of personnel.
Hao had a desk job and didn't see much action. But that changed one night when he was called in to dress the wounds of a Falun Gong practitioner who had been beaten in custody.
One night, after a heavy snowfall, I got a call from the office, telling me to bring a female police officer to the Nankai Public Security Bureau. When I got there, they told me to go to the interrogation room. Nothing else was said. As soon as I went in, there was an old woman in there crying by herself. We were told to look at her injuries. My colleague and I were out of uniform because we had just come from the city bureau. So the woman told us that a police officer had beaten and injured her. She asked me and the female police officer to look at her back. And I saw that both of her shoulders were beat into a black-purple color, and there were two gashes.
Moved by what he saw, Hao eventually decided to break from the 610 office and leave China. With the tools of torture and the resources of the world's most populous nation, then Chinese President Jiang Zemin thought he could crush Falun Gong in 3 months. But as history played out, many practitioners were able to not only withstand the brutality of the persecution, but turn the tables on the Chinese government by exposing the persecution around the world. This is their story. Zhou Yu Yuan had known about Falun Gong for less than a year when the crackdown began. She says she didn't learn Falun Gong for health reasons, but said she was inspired by the ideas in the Falun Gong books. 3 days after the crackdown on July 23rd, she went to Beijing to appeal for Falun Gong. Chinese citizens are supposed to be able to appeal any injustice at the National Appeals Office in Beijing, but she never made it there. Plainclothes police arrested her at her hotel in Beijing.
Early that morning, they came to say that there was a room inspection. They asked me if I practiced Falun Gong. I said yes, and then they took me away.
She was held for 2 weeks and sent back to Guangzhou. She then went to appeal again, was arrested again, and then again. After the third trip, Zhou was sent to the Jiatou labor camp for 2 years. And then transferred to 5 different special facilities for transforming practitioners, black jails.
You can call the black jail. It's not legal jail. It's just a, you know, modified school, warehouse, any place they can find.
After the persecution began, many black jails were created to transform practitioners. They're completely off the radar, unacknowledged, and outside the law. They're basically a kind of transformation boot camp with a daily regimen of anti-Falun Gong propaganda and torture. So described some of the torture she suffered at the Huangpu Brainwashing Center.
In the beginning, they would take a bucket and fill it with water and handcuff you and hold you upside down and immerse your head in the water. This would happen twice a night, starting at midnight, and they would do this for a few hours and then leave you there with water all over your body. And someone would stand next to you and ask, "So, are you still going to practice?"
One Beijing-based attorney who represented Falun Gong practitioners in court said what shocked him most about the persecution was that almost every practitioner he represented, male or female, had been sexually abused while in custody. He himself was later arrested and his whereabouts are unknown. His wife and son have since gained refugee status in the U.S.
Afterwards, they took off all my clothes and continued with the same torture. They even use plastic toilet brushes and steel brushes to scrub your body. During this, they would do other things to torture you, like pouring cold water on you and other things. After going through this, because they took my clothes off while torturing me, and because I still didn't give in, they called everyone in for a meeting and forced them to criticize me and say how shameless I was.
After being tortured to the brink of death, Zhou was released so that local police could avoid responsibility for her death. She later filmed reenactments of some of the torture methods she suffered while in custody. She also documented all of the different torture techniques used on her over a period of 4 years. In total, she listed 34 different torture methods.
At that time, when they would spend the whole night torturing me, guess what they were saying? They would say that it was so hard on them because they have to stay late and work overtime to torture you, and they have to stay up at night. They also have to use their own energy to beat you. And they said they felt it was very unfair and they were tired. They would ask, "Why won't you transform? If you transform, I will get paid and everything would be easier."
After coming home, Zhou decided to leave China and applied for a passport. But before she could escape, she was taken back into custody for 7 months. After again being tortured to the brink of death, she was again released.
This is why some people say that in China there is no concept of the rule of law or even awareness of the law. Many people have been transferred back and forth between these institutions and haven't been released to go home. They just go from a labor camp to a transformation center and then from the center back to a labor camp.
After spending 4 months recovering at home, Zhou eventually fled to Singapore and Malaysia before gaining asylum in Indonesia. Li Weixun is a former Red Guard and Communist Party member. She found that slow-moving Falun Gong exercises helped relieve her arthritis pain, and she eventually taught her teenage son to practice. After the persecution began, she appealed 3 times at the provincial and national appeals offices.
Before we got to the front door of the office, 4 people came up to us and asked, "Are you Falun Gong?" We answered yes. They drove us to the basement of the Liaoning Province Liaison Office in Beijing. The rooms were filled with Falun Gong practitioners. I was surprised to see them. At night, when the police got drunk, they would have fun by beating the practitioners. The painful screams of the practitioners lasted all night.
Like Zhou, Li refused to sign a written promise not to practice Falun Gong, but she was still released and sent back to her home in Shenyang. She appealed 2 more times and began distributing pamphlets about Falun Gong locally. But as the pressure increased, she was forced to leave home to avoid arrest.
The police threatened to send me to a brainwashing center. I tried to figure out a way to avoid the arrest. I didn't do anything wrong, so I wasn't going to let them arrest me.
For 2 years, Lee lived with relatives and other Falun Gong practitioners, never staying in one place for long. Despite the danger, she continued to produce and hand out Falun Gong flyers in public. But then in 2002, local police raided a workshop that was producing Falun Gong materials. Lee was found and taken into custody.
They didn't let me sleep for 4 days and nights in order to make me expose the practitioners I knew. I told the guards what they were doing to me was wrong. So they cuffed my hands in the back and raised my arms until they couldn't go up anymore. The handcuffs cut into my flesh and my wrists bled. Then they lifted a scooter on top of my head and banged it with a big stick. I still didn't talk. Then they hit my shin bones with a heavy iron bar and kicked my ankles with army boots. Seeing that I was still quiet, one guard said, "You're really something. We'll try something else next time."
The physical abuse continued, and after 2 months, Lee became paralyzed from the waist down. As her condition worsened, prison authorities feared she was on the brink of death and released her to the local hospital. After being discharged, Lee was put under house arrest with 24-hour surveillance, but she was determined to escape.
My brother helped me. He was in America when he heard about my situation, and he immediately returned to China.
The two made a daring escape in broad daylight.
My brother came home one day and he asked me, "Why are you still here?" I was already dressed and I said, "I'm ready to leave." He said, "Don't move, I'll go do a lookout." He told me, "I'll go circle the area. When I call, don't answer the phone and just come out." Then he left. In a while, he called and I lifted myself up and went out to the street. I came out and there was a police car right there. I lifted up my hand and waved for a taxi. The first one didn't stop. I looked over at the police car. I was afraid I would get caught. As I waved again, a second taxi came by and stopped right next to me. When I opened the door, my brother was sitting there.
With her brother's help, Lee made it to Tibet and then to Thailand, where she gained refugee status. With help from overseas practitioners, both she and her son eventually came to the U.S. as refugees. Lee's brother stayed in China to help more practitioners escape, but was later arrested, beaten to disability, and sentenced to 8 years in prison. His current whereabouts are unknown. But even outside China, the Chinese state-run media has turned practitioners into second-class citizens in Chinese communities. Meanwhile, the persecution continues in China, and almost no one knows that some of the passers-by on the street have endured more than most of us can imagine. They had escaped from prison and made it out of China, but their journey was still just beginning. Hao Feng Jun gained asylum in Australia, Han Guangshen in Canada. In the U.S., Zhou Yu Yuan and Li Wei Shun joined other Falun Gong practitioners working to end the persecution. But they quickly encountered a new obstacle. A lot of people really didn't care about Falun Gong, or didn't care enough to speak out.
After I arrived in Thailand, I told a UN official about it. He said that he couldn't do anything about what was happening inside China.
Many countries, companies, and individuals had a lot to lose by opposing China, and many were silenced by self-interest.
The Americans love to get up and and talk about democracy and freedom and the ideals of individual human dignity and so forth, and that by God there wouldn't have been a Holocaust if only we'd known, etc., etc. But when it comes to the crunch, we really are interested in the money.
And even inside China, many outsiders weren't aware of what was going on behind closed doors.
They might be there for many years and not have the faintest clue of what is happening in Chinese society, you know, behind the Hard Rock Cafe and all the other bars and nightclubs of Shanghai.
But in the face of international indifference, Falun Gong practitioners plus a handful of non-practitioners put their lives on hold and dedicated themselves fully to saving the lives of people half a world away. Theirs is a journey from courage to hope.